Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with 6 race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Later this hour, we'll find out about 3 remarkable Iowa women, the latest honorees on Iowa's Women of Achievement Bridge in Des Moines. But first, when most of us plan for a summer road trip, we focus on the big destinations. But there are a lot of great stops and hidden gems in Iowa that can break up the monotony of a long car ride and make for some great memories along the way. Megan Bannister is a fan of the roadside attraction and has put together a list of some of her favorites in Iowa. She's a travel writer based in Des Moines and blogs at oleoiniowa.com. Hello, Megan.
Hi, how are you, Charity?
Great, welcome to the show.
Great, thanks for having me.
And Megan, you are not a native Iowan, so let's talk about that. You grew up in the Chicago area?
I did, yeah. So I grew up in the western suburbs and moved to Iowa, gosh, about 10 years ago now to go to Drake and then just never left.
So when you moved to Iowa and after graduation and you started exploring, you started this blog to share some of the places that you were exploring in Iowa. Tell me what got you excited about travel in Iowa.
Yeah, well, I just always hate hearing people say that there's nothing to do in the Midwest, that we're just flyover country. And so since I was new to Iowa, I was excited to go and just kind of see what the state had to offer. And I started looking and asking people who I knew had lived here for a long time. And just really through combing the internet and talking to people, found that Iowa has a ton of things to offer. And a lot of them are maybe a little more off the beaten path, but that there's lots to see.
Can you tell me about an early stop that really kind of got you hooked on Iowa?
Yeah, I know. I think right after college, a friend and I went on a road trip and we're going to go visit some friends in Iowa City and stopped. And right by Iowa City, there's the world's largest wooden nickel that didn't have any placards, doesn't have any signs or directional anything, just is kind of in the middle of a field off of a road. And that was kind of the time where I was like, oh, you know, this is kind of fun. And it was a little bit of an adventure after that, too, to kind of research and see why it was there and who put it there. And I have a traditional journalism background, so I went to school for print journalism and newspapers. And so that seemed like a good fit and a fun side project.
And you do seem to have a real weakness for anything that is the world's largest.
I do. Yeah, those are some of my favorites. And I am definitely guilty in my friend group of saying, oh, it's just a few miles off the road. And then 45 minutes later, we find the world's largest thing that we were looking for. So,
and the world's largest wooden nickel, as you mentioned, I mean, a lot of people just drive past that. It's just on right next to a farm field.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Just finding those things that people might overlook or might be a part of their day every day that they don't notice. In Des Moines, one of them is a log cabin that's at the site of the original Fort Des Moines that's just over by Principal Park on the river. And people drive by it every day on their way to work and might not notice that that's a unique part of Des Moines history.
Well, let's talk about some of the stops that you consider to be worth getting off I-84. And of course, a lot of people in Iowa and a lot of people from out of Iowa travel across the state on I-80 without stopping anywhere except, you know, to grab something to drink and take a pit stop. There are a lot of things that are pretty close to the interstate, but you picked maybe, I don't know, the most obvious thing, the thing that you cannot avoid seeing on I-80 to start off with, which is the world's largest truck stop. Why choose that one?
So I had spent, growing up in Chicago, I do a lot of Des Moines to Chicago driving and to visit family and that kind of thing. And I had stopped at the world's largest truck stop for years before I realized that there was more than just fill up your tank, grab some Caribou coffee, and keep on going. And actually stopped one time and went to the I-80 Trucking Museum, which is like the full history of trucking, which seems fitting at a truck stop. But they also have, and I haven't used any of these, so I can't speak to how the experience is, but they have a barbershop and a chiropractor and a dentist and a dog wash and like all kinds of amenities that if you find yourself on the road and need one of those things or just trying to kill some time are kind of a fun thing to do other than just, you know, pulling up your car, filling up some gas and continuing on your way.
You know, the world's largest truck stop has grown so dramatically since it opened, and it was the world's largest truck stop then. It almost feels like a shopping mall to me now.
Yes, yeah. Since they redid it last year, a year before, it's gotten very big, and I think they've done some updates on the museum too. But definitely worth a stop, even if you just need to grab some gas and a snack. It's worth seeing the inside of.
All right. And of course, if you've driven on I-80, you know where the world's largest truck stop is. But it's near Walcott. Mm-hmm. It's on the western side of the state. Let's talk about some of the maybe smaller attractions along the way. You picked out one that's very close to Iowa City, just south of Iowa City in Riverside, the future birthplace of Captain James T. Kirk, of course, Star Trek fame. Tell me about this.
Yeah. So, gosh, a few years ago, it's been a while now, but one of the local, I think, councilmen petitioned to have that be Captain Kirk's official birthplace. Obviously, if anyone's a Star Trek fan, they know that he is famed to be born in Iowa, but not until, I think it's 2228.
Yep.
And so
coming
we still
right
have,
up.
Yeah, coming right up. But they petitioned to have that be his official birthplace. And so you can go to Riverside and see a marker for the, in a few hundred years, place of his birth. I'm not sure it's still there, but when I was there, there was also a plaque in Murphy's Bar and Grill under the pool table that was the future place of his conception. So you can go and do that. And then every year, if you time it up right, I think it was just this last weekend.
It was.
The last weekend in June, they have a Trek Fest. So you can go and see the Voyage Home Museum, which has a ton of Star Trek memorabilia and just some fun things from the movies and the show. And then, take part in some fun town activities, too.
And just last year, they dedicated a new statue of James T. Kirk.
Mm-hmm.
So now it feels very official.
Yes, you can go take your photo with him and see where he'll be born in the future.
All right. And that'll take you, well, maybe it'll take you at least a half an hour or so to get there and back. But you'll want to spend a little bit of time when you get there. Some of these roadside attractions that you've picked out, they're kind of an investment of time. Mm-hmm. So do you have to change your mindset when you're traveling to embrace some of the serendipity of roadside attractions?
I think so. I think certainly there's times where, you know, you're on a schedule and you have to get somewhere by a certain time. And some of these things might not be as doable. But I think if you're going to be in the car for 5 or 6 hours, embracing the fact that, you know, adding 20 minutes to your drive, and if you have to eat lunch anyway, choosing something that maybe supports a small community or is a little bit off the highway is kind of a mindset change, but I think it's definitely worth it, and it'll be more memorable in the long run than just, you know, saying we sat in the car for 5.5 hours to get to our final destination.
Do you recommend planning these stops out ahead of time?
I do. I'm a big planner, but I also try to leave room for some of those things. I've been known to like slam on the brakes and pull a U-turn if I see a sign for something that looks like it's really good. So I think kind of leaving room for both of those, looking and seeing maybe what's along your route if you're headed somewhere, but then also knowing if you have a little bit of extra wiggle room, that if you see something that looks fun and enticing, to just kind of follow that and see where it takes you.
The next recommendation that you make, I think, is one of those things where you want to invest a little bit of extra time.
Mm-hmm.
You chose the bridges of Madison County. Why did they make your list?
I think it's one of the more iconic Iowa things. And even if someone maybe hasn't been to Iowa or doesn't know a ton about the Midwest, chances are they've heard of the bridges of Madison County. They've maybe seen the movie with Meryl Streep and Clint Eastwood. And it's one of those that if you take just, you know, a 15-minute detour off I-80 to the south toward Winterset, you can see one of the bridges and take some photos and get out of the car for a little bit and head back up. Or like you said, you can invest a little bit more time and maybe go see all 5, soon to be 6, I think, when the Cedar Bridge reopens. And you can stop in town, get lunch at the Northside Cafe. Like I said, if you have to eat lunch anyway, you might as well do it somewhere that has really good pie.
And when you tour a place like this, I mean, you know, when you're traveling across the country or across the state and you see a place on the map and you think, oh, that might be interesting to see, what kind of research do you do before you go so that you make the most out of your time there?
Yeah. So it's usually kind of a hodgepodge. I'll ask other people I know who are either travel writers or just frequent travelers if they have any tips or if there's any places in the area that they would recommend. And then it really is just a lot of Googling. There's some great sites out there like Road Trippers and some places that really highlight some of those more off the beaten path places. And then places like our state tourism office do a really good job having listings for places so you can see when they'll be open and make sure that, you know, your visit will time up with their hours, because there's nothing worse than showing up and finding out that someplace is closed on a Tuesday after
right.
you.
I really want to go to the John Wayne Museum, but
yes.
I can't. So obviously, Olio, in Iowa, your website is a great place to look for these ideas as well. Do you try to come up with an idea of how long you'll spend in a place before you go?
Sometimes. Usually it just kind of depends on what I find. There's been places that I thought, oh, this will be a really quick in and out, and we'll just stop and take some photos. And actually there was a ton more stuff to see there, or maybe there was a adjoining museum or just some other stuff to check out that maybe I hadn't realized. So I'm also a little infamous for derailing our trips when it comes to the scheduling. So we always try to add in some buffer time, because I have found that especially when you're getting off the beaten path a little, you always need a little more time than you plan on thinking you're going to need.
Yeah, and do you recommend that there's a family meeting before you head out to make sure everybody's on board and understands what you're doing?
Yes, yeah, I would say having everybody on the same page is very key, and having forgiving road trip partners who are good at keeping time but also flexible when you say, oh, I just want to make one more stop.
So you mentioned seeing signs and getting waylaid by those. Is there a favorite kind of sign that hooks you in almost every time? I'm a sucker for historical markers, which my
yes.
children hate. But
yeah, well, because they come up really fast.
They
those
do.
Historical marker ones, it'll be like historical marker 100 feet. So you have to be ready for that.
Right. And you have to get out of the car because
right, you can't read it.
Yeah. There's a lot of text on a lot of those.
Yes.
Signs.
No, I understand those ones. Like food will get me. If there's pie, that's usually a surefire stop. I feel like Iowa just has a bunch of, like, all the small towns have really cute and funny signs as well. So just those always crack me up. I think Stewart has one that's like a bunch of stinkers and a few good eggs or something like that. And that one's just always makes me laugh.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I am talking with travel writer and blogger Megan Bannister. You can find out more about some of the places she loves to visit at her website, olioiniowa.com. And we'll be back in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th. With 6 race events, including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Coming up in about 15 minutes, we're going to find out about 3 remarkable Iowa women who are the latest honorees on Iowa's Women of Achievement Bridge in Des Moines. Right now, we are talking about great places to stop along the way if you're road tripping across Iowa this summer or anytime. With me is Megan Bannister. She is a travel writer based in Des Moines. She blogs at olioiniowa.com. And we'd also love to hear from you. What are some of your favorite stops, some hidden gems in Iowa places? They don't have to be right off I-80. We're going to talk about some of our quirky attractions that are not close to the interstate in just a few minutes, but we'd love to hear about your favorites. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Megan, let's move on to a recommendation that you have for driving on more of a historic byway. Tell me about the White Pole Road.
Yeah, so the White Pole Road is a great one if you're headed east or west on I-80 from Des Moines, or I guess west from Des Moines on I-80, but it won't take you that much of a detour. It's actually a 26-mile historic byway that opened in the early 1900s and followed the path of the Pacific Railroad when it opened in Des Moines. So it goes from Dexter to Adair. So it's just a little chunk north of I-80 that you can hop on and experience some small towns, see some unique history. There's a Bonnie and Clyde shootout site. You can see one of the banks that they robbed on their way through Iowa. Just some fun things like that that are a little bit more doable if maybe you have a long day of driving and don't have a ton of time for a big detour.
And this is along historic U.S. Highway 6, right?
Yes. Yep. That's correct.
Which, of course, you can take that almost all the way across the state with a few little detours and see a lot of small towns along the way if you have a lot more time, of course. So when you want to take a road like White Pole Road, that's again, changing the way you're traveling, at least for a little while. It changes the speed. It changes the whole feeling, doesn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. Just kind of taking more time to slow down and notice some of those things, stop at some of those funny signs, you know, get out, snap a photo, see a little piece of history and not just blow by someplace on, you know, interstate highway.
All right. And if you want to, your next recommendation doesn't take you very far off the interstate at all. The Danish Windmill and Restaurants near Elkhorn. Tell me about that stop.
Yeah. So that one is really close, just north of 80 a little bit in Elkhorn. And they just redid a Danish windmill that the town has. Iowa has a large concentration of Danes who live near Elkhorn, and it was actually at one time one of the biggest in the country. And so they have a authentic Danish windmill that just underwent renovations. You can go and see that and tour that, but you can also stop and get some traditional Danish food. There's a new restaurant that just opened called the Danish Table that kind of combines some of that traditional food with some kind of American comfort food. And then you can also stop at the Flour Mill, which has really good pizza, and one of their pizza toppings is a frikadeller, which is Danish meatballs. So I recommend that one.
All right. And of course, the Museum of Danish America is also in Elkhorn if you have a little bit more time to stop. Your next pick was one I can't believe I hadn't heard of it. The Volkswagen Beetle Spider. Tell me about this.
Yeah, so that it's what it sounds like. It is a giant spider sculpture made out of an old Volkswagen Beetle. And it is just in someone's like kind of side yard again, right up against the cornfields, that they convinced their dad to let them leave there. And if you get off at the exit and head south toward Avoca, it's just kind of if you follow the main road, you'll see it on your left, I believe, if you're headed south.
All right. Describe it just a little bit more for me.
I mean,
you said it's just what it sounds like, but a Volkswagen Beetle spider is not a thing. So.
That is true. So it's like the cab of an old Volkswagen Beetle. So think like Herbie Fully Loaded era Beetle. He's black. And it's on these, instead of tires, it has these spindly legs that lift it probably, I'd say, 6 or 7 feet into the air. So you can walk under it, you can walk around it. And yeah, he's just a really interesting piece of yard art.
All right. And Googling about this Volkswagen Beetle spider made me realize that this is actually a trend.
Yeah, there's a ton all over the country, which is hilarious to me. But yeah, it could be your new thing that you look for when you travel.
All right. So this is ours. This is in Iowa. Our only one, at least, that we know of.
Yes.
If you have
a
Volkswagen Beetle spider that we don't know about, give us a call. 866-780-9100. Some of these little attractions, like, I mean, it's in someone's yard. This is on private property. Is that a little bit tricky? Is that something you need to be concerned about, at least not making yourself a nuisance?
I think so, yeah. Just always being respectful of things like that. And they've left it there. They're very friendly about people stopping and taking some photos. But yeah, just be aware that you're, you know, near someone's house. And if it's later in the evening or early in the morning, maybe you just do a drive-by and don't stop and cause a ruckus.
All right. Now let's talk. We're going way out west to Council Bluffs. Let's talk about the Squirrel Cage Jail. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So this one is not what it sounds like. there are not any squirrels involved. But it is one of the only remaining rotary jails in the country. And there were only ever, I think, 18 or 20 of these built. So the center column stays still, and then the jail cells around it rotate. So you would have inmates who they would rotate out, and then the jail cell would just basically be suspended without a door or anything like that to save space, presumably. So you can go and tour it today and stop and walk through and see kind of what that looked like. And if you're a ghost hunter at all, this is also one of the more haunted places in Iowa.
All right. And if you want to hear more about it, we did do sort of an in-depth interview about the Squirrel Cage Jail on Talk of Iowa a while back. So you can look that up on our website at iowapublicradio.org. Really a terrifying structure, because the jail would get stuck sometimes. It wouldn't rotate properly, and then you could be trapped. It's just totally horrifying. Obviously, it hasn't been used in a really, really long time, thankfully,
yes.
At least not the rotating part of it. Let's move off of I-80 and talk about some other quirky Iowa attractions, places where you might want to spend a little more time, some of them, and some of them you might just want to drive right past and take a look at it, take a quick picture. But let's talk about Matchstick Marvels, which is in Gladbrook, and it's been getting a lot of attention recently because it was featured in a Greetings from Iowa episode, which is a web series from Iowa Public Television. But tell us about Matchstick Marvels.
Yeah, so Matchstick Marvels is a basically a showroom for an Iowa artist named Patrick Acton, and he creates these incredible sculptures out of only matchsticks. And so for the past more than 40 years, he's been making these and used millions of matchsticks to create things like the U.S. Capitol. He's done some Harry Potter-themed ones. I think his most recent one is the 1970 Dodge Charger from Fast and the Furious. And it's a full life-size model that he's made entirely out of matchsticks. And they light up, and some of them move slightly and things like that. But it's just an amazing thing to see that I never would have thought of existed. But it's a really fun stop if you have some time.
And Matchstick Marvels is, it's really off the beaten track. Gladbrook is not a typical spot where you might stop.
No, yeah, you can kind of plan it in if maybe you're headed toward Waterloo or up toward Decorah and make a little bit of a detour. But yeah, it's more of a destination than an I-80 stop for sure.
All right, so Matchstick Marvels in Gladbrook. Now let's talk about, this has been a stop for a very long time for a lot of people. Let's talk about the Grotto of Redemption in West Bend, Iowa, which if you haven't seen it, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's incredible and has been, was started in, I think, 1912 and was kind of a work in progress. I think they're still doing some things today, but is a beautiful, really ornate grotto with tons of precious stones and just all kinds of different sculptures and things like that built into it. But even if you're not a super religious person, it's something to see for sure, just because of the detail and the intricacy of some of these mosaics.
Well, and looking into the history of a place like the Grotto of Redemption is so interesting, because you stop and you think, how did this come here? Who did this? Who made this possible? Do you like to research the history?
I do, yeah. I love to learn about the people who either make places like that, or especially for World's Largest Things and some of those more off the beaten path places, the people who have maintained them and kind of make that their life's passion of getting people there and making sure that it's around for someone else to visit in another 10 or 20 years.
Let's talk about a couple world's largest ball of popcorn in Sac City, Iowa. Tell me about this.
Yeah, so this is one of my personal favorites. The most recent popcorn ball was completed in 2016. This is the, I think, fourth time that they've remade it, because for a while there was a town in Indiana that was trying to also hold this world's largest record and kept making their own. And so the current ball weighs, I think, just over 9,000 pounds and is about 8 feet tall. So you can, if you're driving near Sac City, you can stop and pull over, and it's just in a little white shed with a big window that you can kind of look in on it.
You have to keep a popcorn ball inside.
Yeah, the old one, when they took it away to replace it with this new one, I think had to be lifted out on like a forklift because it was so dense from all of the corn syrup and just sitting for years in the sun. So it's a little bit of a marvel of food as well.
All right. And the world's largest strawberry, completely different part of the state. Now we're talking about northeastern Iowa.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So Strawberry Point has the world's largest strawberry. And this is a good photo op if you don't have a ton of time. is a fiberglass 15-foot tall strawberry that stands kind of on a big post in the center of town. And there's a cute little ice cream shop next door, so you can grab some ice cream and snap your photo at the strawberry and say that you saw the world's largest one.
And it surprises me nobody seems to be competing for this. I mean, it's been the world's largest strawberry since the 1960s.
Yeah, that, I guess, is not as contentious as popcorn balls.
You would think. I hope nobody gets any ideas.
Right.
All right. Let's talk about Crystal Lake Cave in Dubuque. Of course, there are so many attractions around Dubuque and so many great places to hike and spend time outside. What caught your attention about Crystal Lake Cave?
Yeah, so this was one that I visited real early with a friend in kind of this writing journey, and we just thought it sounded like fun. It was the summer, so it was really hot and humid out, and caves are great because they are temperature controlled throughout the year, so it was nice and cool, and I am not usually a small spaces person, but Crystal Lake Cave is great if you are a little bit claustrophobic, because it does have passageways that are a little more paved, a little more accessible. But if you like Spook Cave and like kind of the boat aspect, you can go and take a guided tour of Crystal Lake Cave and actually walk around inside the cave and see some of the formations and things like that.
And it's a lovely thing to do in the summer heat as
yes,
well.
Yes, when it's hot.
Nice and cool down there. We have a recommendation from Beth. She sent us an email and says she recommends the Hoover Museum, a quick stop off I-80, especially at the end of the year. They have a themed Christmas tree that's different each year and really fun. Now, again, that's one of those stops where you can make it a quick stop, but it's a great place to go and spend some real time. It's a great museum, and it has a little historical village attached to it and a prairie. I guess I'm not a quick stopper, I guess is what
no,
I,
for
what
things
I'm
like
learning.
That, I'm not either. I'm too much of a plaque reader.
Lots of reading to do at the Hoover Museum. It's
yes,
a wonderful
for
place
sure.
to visit. All right, another giant attraction, Albert the Bull in Audubon. Tell us about Albert the Bull.
Yes, so Albert is the world's largest bull, and he weighs about 45 tons and is about 30 feet tall, sorry, and has a horn span of 15 feet. So he's very, very big, and he is a authentic replica of his type of bull.
Except bigger.
Except bigger, right. And then was created by the town's version of the JC's that hosts the T-Bone Days, because Audubon is a big beef producer. And so he has been equestrian on Jeopardy. He's been in a Beethoven movie. He's had a lot of mileage just outside of Iowa. But that's another one. If you're in the area, if you're over visiting Templeton Rise Distillery, you can kind of make a little detour and give a wave to Albert.
Is he the world's largest bull?
He is, yes.
All right. And nobody's competing with us for that, at least
no,
not yet.
North Dakota does have a cow, though. So, but
right.
Slightly different.
Watch out, Albert. And your final pick of the day is one I think a lot of people know about. And this year is the 30th anniversary of the film that inspired this stop. But Field of Dreams in Dyersville, the Field of Dreams is still there and is a great attraction for people. What do you love about this?
I just feel like the Field of Dreams is one of those really iconic Iowa things, kind of like the bridges of Madison County. If people haven't been here, they probably know of the movie or at least know of Field of Dreams. And it's a fun stop. I think most people might not realize that you can actually go there and visit it, especially during the summer. They have events and they have baseball games. You can actually go watch the ghost players emerge from the corn and then play a baseball game. I haven't been, but they recently reopened the house to the farmhouse that's there. So you can go and tour the house. And I think it might even be an Airbnb every once in a while. But yeah, it's just a really fun way to see a piece of iconic Iowa history, and you can go and run the bases and just do something that's really kind of summer fun, but with a little twist.
Well, and it's one of those stops where you can make a quick stop if
for sure.
You're off hours. You know, you can just stop, run the bases, see it, and move on. But as you mentioned, they plan a lot of events there, so mm-hmm. You can do a little bit of research and make it more of a destination.
For sure. Yeah, we went, I think, for the 25th anniversary, and they had some of the actors back to play a charity game, and they do, I think, every summer. They show the film on the field and things like that, and it's just a lot of fun.
So are you planning a road trip this summer?
I am a little bit. We're doing some treks around the state to see some new world's largest things that I personally haven't been to yet, and then some trips up north to visit some supper clubs as well.
And tell me about your interest in supper clubs, because you've been doing a lot of research about them.
I have been, yeah. So supper clubs are one of those things that I think is just really iconically Midwestern. And
yeah, maybe even more Minnesotan and Wisconsin than Iowa. But
yes,
are.
And Iowa is funny because they have a little bit of a twist where you might see more onion rings and tenderloins than you might in, say, Wisconsin. But they're those classic steakhouses. You can get, you know, a grasshopper or some of those alcoholic ice cream drinks. So I've been doing, yeah, a lot of traveling around and eating and visiting those for a book I'm working on about Iowa supper clubs.
All right. And what's the timeline for that?
So that will be out likely early next year.
All right. And you'll definitely have to come back on the show and tell us all about that. So do you have you've got about 30 seconds left, one piece of advice for people as they're road tripping to sort of broaden their minds and embrace some of these destinations?
Yeah, I think just being flexible and being willing to stray from the highway. I know I'm totally guilty of this too, especially if it's a holiday weekend, it's busy, the road's going to be crowded. Maybe you're feeling stressed about when you're going to get somewhere to your final destination, and just kind of letting some of that go and being open to being surprised by places along the way or even by states or towns that you think don't have anything worth doing. I feel like there's usually, if there's not a historic marker, maybe there's a someplace that has really good ice cream or really good pie or just some little thing that you can find that is worth making a stop for.
Megan Bannister, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Megan Bannister is a travel writer and blogger. She's based in Des Moines, and she blogs at oleoiniowa.com. Coming up in just a moment, we're going to find out about three remarkable Iowa women who are the latest honorees on Iowa's Women of Achievement Bridge in Des Moines. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.